Welcome to the show. I hope you had a wonderful four-day weekend. But now we're back into the swing of things, back to reality. And we're going to talk about a subject today that is very real, that is unavoidable. And for some people, it's scary. We're going to talk about death. Today's guest is Stephen Garrett of EmbraceYourDeath.com. He has a very interesting take on death. Death doesn't have to be scary. Death is a natural process of life. And he gives us a lot of information on how we can view death. And it's not scary, or it shouldn't be scary, and it shouldn't be dark and gloomy. Normally, whenever we think about death, people get scared, they get sad, but there's a different way that we can look at it and be ready for it. Now, you're thinking, well, you know, why should we think about that? Why should we be concerned about death? I didn't start thinking about death until I became a father. Before that, I was just living life and not thinking about death. But once I became a father, I started to think about, well, you know, first, I'd hate to leave my son without a father. So I'm very careful now, you know, when I'm driving or when I'm doing things. I don't take as much risks as I used to, as far as life or death risks. And then I start to think about, well, if I'm not around, my family needs to be taken care of. So there are things that we need to do as men to make sure that those that are left behind are taken care of. So those are things that we touched on. And once you take care of those on a personal level, in my particular case, once I got those things in place, then it felt like a weight was lifted off my shoulders and I could go and enjoy my family, enjoy my son. So it doesn't have to be dark and gloomy and it doesn't have to be scary. And I like Stephen's approach, Stephen's spin to life and death. So we're going to talk about that in a little bit. Now, I want to thank you for tuning in. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to listen, to send in emails. And if you want to send me an email, you can do that by writing at robaguilarshow@gmail.com. And that's Rob, R-O-B-A-G-U-I-L-A-R, show@gmail.com. Send me your suggestions, send me comments. I'd love to hear from you. So we also want to thank a couple of sponsors that help out and support the show. We've got Roan Jewelry, that's R-O-A-N jewelry.com. They have great gifts now that we're in that holiday season. They have really cool jewelry for that special woman in your life, or your friend or your secretary, your mom, your sister. Check them out. When you purchase from them, you help support this show. So we got a lot of fun things lined up. Stick around. You do not want to be left out.
From A1 Studios in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, New York, this is the Rob Aguilar Show.
We have Stephen Garrett of EmbraceYourDeath.com. Stephen is the author of his latest book, When Death Speaks, Listen, Learn, and Love. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rob. I'm glad to be here, and it's a sunny, fine day here in Vancouver, Canada.
Oh, very nice. It's dark and gloomy here in New York, and death is, in fact, a very dark and gloomy subject.
It is indeed.
Why do you think that as young men in their 20s and their 30s or 40s, who are the men that listen to this show, and these guys, I would say, are in their prime. You're at your prime, you're at your peak, you're feeling your best when you're within that age group. Why should we think about death at this age?
Well, I had an interesting conversation with a couple of older fellows yesterday. They were each 65, 68, 70, somewhere around in that age, retired. And they were pretty low on the pole of excitement and living in life, because as they approached their death, they realized there was a whole bunch of stuff they wanted to get done that they just didn't make time for. So at the end of their life, they're regretting the fact they didn't live as fully as they could have. Had they felt that way when they were 20 or 30 or 40, they may have been inspired to live way more fully back in those days and not be sitting close to their deathbed regretting the fact that they hung back in the woods a little bit.
Would you say that part of that is that when you're younger, when you're in your 20s or 30s, death seems so far away that you think that whatever you can do, you keep putting off. Is that part of the issue, you think?
Absolutely. I've got a 22-year-old son, and he was at Sound Engineering School about 2 years ago. And one of his buddies, who was 21, got shot to death in the streets of Surrey, BC. Horrible, tragic, nasty piece of work. And the school was, you know, all the his bros were sad and upset and angry and concerned and frustrated. All those kinds of feelings that come up around death. And, you know, about a month or so after the death had come and gone and the burial was done, I said to my son, Oliver, I said, what do you think the gift is that your buddy left for you as he died and left this planet? And Oliver got a little pissed off because he thought it was kind of a rude, nasty question to ask so early in his grief for the loss of his friend. But he looked at it and he came to me about 3 weeks later and said, Dad, I got the gift that my buddy's death left me. And I said, what's that? He said, well, I used to think I had a tomorrow. Now I'm not so sure. I don't think I'm going to procrastinate anymore. I'm going to get my ass off my chair and get up to what I want to get up to. And for the last year and a half, Rob, I've watched my 22-year-old son live his life as though he's on fire, and he hasn't held back. He hasn't waited. He hasn't procrastinated. He's just living his life full on. So out of that grim death that he witnessed of his brother at school, he got a very important life lesson, which is, you know, plan for tomorrow, but live like there's no today, if you know what I mean by that.
Very fascinating. I like how you put that. And I guess when someone is about to pass due to an illness, I think that it becomes easier to accept, maybe, whereas someone who passes away tragically, like your son's buddy, probably maybe tougher to comprehend and understand. Is that what you normally see?
Yeah, it's, you know, if somebody's 80 years old, 85 years old, and, you know, they're gradually aging and their health is diminishing, we have this feeling in our bodies and our hearts and our minds, well, you know, Uncle Harry's lived a great life. He's 85, and there's an okayness about it. There's kind of a life rightness about it. When death is sudden and tragic and it's a young person, there seems to be a wrongness about it that we struggle with. The shock of the death, the quickness of it, the lack of time to say goodbye well, all that kind of stuff really jars the younger people for sure.
I can share a personal story. When my grandmother passed away a few years ago, she was over 100 years old when she went. And although we were saddened and we miss her dearly, she was a wonderful woman, but it was definitely her time to go. I mean, over 100 years on this earth is a long time, but it's also, and we hear the cliche all the time, it's also very short. I mean, even at her age and when she was in her 90s, she would tell us, live your life because life is short.
Yeah.
And imagine someone in their 90s and saying life is short.
Yeah.
So it's an old cliche and everyone says it. Yeah, life is short. It really is, even for someone who's lived that long. And although you're saddened because you're going to miss them, you're not going to see them, you're almost, I want to say, you're more than anything grateful that they were part of your life.
Yes.
For such a long time. That is, I think, a difference where people, I guess it depends on how you see death. You know, I was more grateful that she was alive and around and part of my life more than I was saddened by her departure, although I was sad and I was going to miss her. I don't know if that makes any sense to you.
Totally. You know, I've got a unique approach to death. I don't see death as the Grim Reaper or something black or ugly or nasty. It can be grim. It can be nasty, as evidenced by the story I told you about Oliver's friend. But my take on death is it's actually more of a inspirational teacher, and that's a very natural, fundamental, important aspect of life that we need to learn to get back in touch with. I mean, Rob, there's 57 million human deaths a year on the planet, 2.5 million a year in the United States of America. So it's a very common thing. We've just made it bad and wrong, and by doing that, we've lost our opportunity to have great goodbyes and also to learn the wisdom that's carried by our loved ones, and to be grateful for the time that we had with them on the planet.
As young men, should we prepare for death, or should we just be aware of it and know that it's a natural process of life?
Well, I would do a couple of things. If I were back in my 20s, I would certainly be prepared for it legally and financially. It's inevitable. It's coming, whether it's in 5 years, 50 years, 55 years, or 105 years, it's coming your way. To be prepared legally and financially is a very generous thing to do for your family. When I've witnessed deaths and seen families not prepared, the chaos at the funeral home, the chaos with the lawyer, the struggling amongst the family, who gets what, all that kind of stuff, is very hard to deal with. So being prepared for death is a responsible, masculine thing to do for your family, absolutely. It's a gift. Secondly, I would put death kind of on my, this may sound odd, but I would put death kind of on my right shoulder just as a reminder that I'm alive today and that I'm on the right side of the green grass. And that's where my gratitude comes from. Every day I wake up, like I woke up this morning, I thought, oh, I'm doing Rob's show today. Yahoo! You know, I'm fired up because I'm breathing, I'm alive, I'm in my body, I'm not dead. And the gratitude I've got for that is tremendous because I'm very fortunate to be alive on the planet at this time and sharing with you guys and your listeners.
Should death be something that we fear?
No. No, absolutely not. It's just a very natural process. It's almost like an exhale, if you will. It's just letting go of the body and moving on to something other than that. I think, Rob, because we've gotten out of touch with who we are as human beings, we fear death because we think we're just a body. And if we're just a body and the body dies, it's over. And that feeling of it being over is sometimes very hard for a young guy to bear.
Do we really know what happens to us after we die? Is that something that you have knowledge of?
Well, I've got some beliefs around it, Rob. I'm still alive, so I can't say what's going to happen to me when I'm dead. But I've got some spiritual beliefs that, I've done a lot of research on. I've spent a lot of time in India, a lot of time in Peru, a lot of time in Africa, a lot of time in Mexico, down in Maya land. And I've hung with a lot of shaman or wisdom carriers, if you will, who've taught me an awful lot about life. And as importantly, they've taught me a lot about death. So I've got some beliefs that I'm a human body plus something. And that plus something, whatever you want to call it, lives on after my body dies. So I've got a certain amount of clarity around what happens to my essence or my spirit.
Could you share some of those beliefs?
Well, yeah, it's almost like I always have been. In other words, the energy that I am or the spirit that I am or the God that I am or the one that I am is energetic. Plus, I'm happening to be renting a human body right now. So I'm in body form. I'm in incarnate, as they say. I'm in meat. When I die, what I'm aware of and what I've been taught is that my essence or my spirit or that plus something releases from the grasp of the human body and moves back into the universe of what's called the One, to be, if you believe in reincarnation, to be reincarnated at a later date. So the essence of me, or that one that's talking with you right now, Rob, or that one that's looking through my eyes, or that one that's making my lips move, that one lives on, whereas the human body ages and dies.
If we were to simplify that a little bit, it's almost like, let's say, a glove.
Yep.
You know, you have a glove and you put your hand into that glove and all of a sudden that glove has movement and you can move it, you can form it, you can shape it, you can do whatever you want because your hand is controlling that glove. And then eventually that glove might get old, it worn out, and you simply toss it. So it's gone. But the hand is still there. Is that kind of more or less?
You got it. You're a new age guru, man. That's exactly it.
And you mentioned cultures there. You said Mexico and Peru. Now, I know, for example, in Mexico, the culture there, I guess dating back to the Aztecs, to the Mayans, they didn't necessarily fear death. In fact, they celebrate it. They have an annual holiday, Day of the Dead.
Absolutely.
And it's interesting how cultures in general will either fear it, it's just part of the cultural thing, or other cultures celebrate it as a natural process, like you said before.
That's right. I mean, you can go to Bali or India. I mean, gosh, in India, death is revered as a great teacher. And, you know, they perform all their cremations by the Ganges River out in public with kids flying their kites in the heat waves that come up out of the funeral fire. So different cultures do it way differently. And in North America, we just have this tendency to want to live forever, as the anti-aging movement is showing us. And we fear death, which is just our way of doing it right now. So
the anti-aging thing is so large. I mean, think about from simple things as anti-wrinkle creams,
yep,
lotions, surgeries, Botox.
Yep.
It's our effort to live forever, and it's pretty interesting. But I don't know if that's necessarily a great thing either, to be around for such a long time. There comes a point in people's lives when maybe it's just by default because they have no other option, but they accept it. And I've seen it with people who are sick.
Yep.
It's almost a point of, I don't want to say giving up, but maybe it's more of accepting. You accept that that's your situation and there's no way around it and it's inevitable and we would die regardless, one way or the other. Whether we're completely healthy, eventually our life will end. Yep. And it just so happens that there's a disease here and that's what's speeding up that process. But we begin to die that first day we take our breath.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That kind of didn't click with me till I became a father.
Yeah.
And I became a father not so long ago, about 10 months ago, for the first time.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
Welcome to fatherhood.
It's an awesome life-changing experience. And so many emotions come into play. But I saw my child take his first breath on this earth. And it was such an amazing feeling. So many thoughts are running through your mind. And part of it is, now I have this child that I have to take care of that's depending on me. I have a wife that needs a husband, that needs a father for this child. I think you take special care in not doing stupid things like when I was younger, you know, driving really fast on the highway. Yeah. or things like that. Well, now I have someone to think about, because if I am not here, then my son will not be taken care of financially, emotionally, and he won't have a father to grow up with.
Correct.
So, but when I saw him take his first breath, then I was thinking, well, here he is taking his first breath and he's alive and well, but, and not to make the situation, that happy situation, dark and gloomy, but here is a human being who's taken his first breath, who down the line is one step closer to death because he just began living. If that makes any sense.
Totally. I mean, it's almost like on the back of your birth certificate in invisible ink is your death certificate. I mean, the two come together, man. They're a matched pair of bookends, and one begets the other. The beauty about noticing your son's first breath is there was this absolute joy, because I saw my son's first breath when Oliver was born. I was just crying my eyes out. I was so happy to see him. And he was alive and well, like your son is. And Oliver came by my house yesterday. He's now 6'4".
Wow.
And he's 23 years old.
Wow.
And it was like, Rob, where did that 20 years go? It went right. So fast. Now he's a young man. He's in the music business. He's busting his butt as a landscaper to make money during the day so he can make his music at night. And you know, he's got a girlfriend and a car and all his music equipment. I mean, he's now got a full-on life. And it seemed to happen in the snap of a finger or the blink of an eye. And so from an older father to a younger father, Rob, I encourage you to really savor each day, each moment, each hug, each kiss with your son, because all of a sudden he's 23 and he's not so huggy and kissy anymore.
We go back to that original point you made.
Yes.
Where you leave things ready for them should you go all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Where he should be taken care of. I think it's the manly thing to do.
Yeah.
But like you stated before, a good man, a righteous man will do everything possible so that when he is no longer here, those that are depending on him will be taken care of.
Yeah. When my father passed back in 2004, he wasn't as well prepared as he could have been. And we didn't have the conversation with Dad when he was well about, well, when you get close to the end, Dad, what medical support do you want? What medical support don't you want? If you're plugged into life support machines, do you want that? And we never got clear on that kind of detail or that kind of issue. So when he was, getting closer and closer to death, the decision was left up to my mom and myself and my other siblings to make on behalf of my dad. You know, do we unplug the guy or don't we? I mean, what happens if they find a cure tomorrow, or what happens if he gets better the next day? So the anguish of that decision for me and my mom to make, because I was the eldest son, I wouldn't want Oliver to feel that. I wouldn't want him to have to struggle with, should I unplug Dad from the machine and have him die, or should I keep him alive because I want to hug his body? So I've made that decision for my son, and I said, and I've got it all written out and documented, and it's all notarized. It's in great shape, so the hospitals will now have to follow my wishes. And it's like, no, don't plug me in. If I can't go for a walk, if I can't have a cup of coffee, if I can't hug my son, if I'm being kept alive on life support, that's not for me. So I've made those hard decisions so my family don't have to struggle with them and make the hard decisions. And I think that's a very responsible and generous thing, as you said, Rob, to leave for your family.
When you took care of all these things, and how did you feel when you were done with all that?
I'm totally relieved. And oddly enough, Rob, I had both my boys over, and I've got this binder of legal documents I call the death binder. It's a bit of a grotesque name for it, but it's kind of a fun name because, you know, the boys didn't want to sit down and talk about it. They didn't want to look at the fact that one day their dad's going to die, even though they may know it. So having that discussion and the boys seeing the plans all laid out and realizing that, yeah, it's inevitable, now they can relax and enjoy their time with me. They don't have to worry about it anymore because we've had that conversation. Also, I bought a life insurance policy that will pay for the airplane tickets for my two boys and my wife to fly my cremated remains, my ashes, to India and dump me in the Ganges River at 6 o'clock in the morning. And that they were quite excited about. Number one, because they get to go to India. Number two, because they don't have to pay for it.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. I like how you put humor into something that is natural yet sad at times. And I think that's what a lot of people fail to do. It's always sad. It's whenever we talk about death, it's always a sad time, a sad moment.
Yeah.
But the fact that you took care of all these things and you said it's the responsible thing to do. Yeah, I never thought in my life I would purchase life insurance, but I did once I became a father, because my son needs to be taken care of, and it felt exactly like you described it. Like I took a weight off my shoulders, and that's taken care of, and now we can relax and do fun things.
Get on with life.
Get on with life. Get on living.
You bet.
Essentially.
You bet. Hey, a couple of other interesting things, if you like, around death. Because we have a fear of death of the human body, we also subconsciously have a fear of change or endings, which means for young guys, we may tend to stay in a job too long because we don't want the paychecks to die. We may tend to stay in a relationship too long because we don't want to be alone. So our fear of death gets translated into different words, if you will, when we start to take a look at life more broadly. And I'm sure there's some guys out there who have stayed in a job a little bit too long or stayed in a relationship a little bit too long because they're frightened as they don't know what's after it.
I've read emails from listeners where they're almost coming to us for advice because they want to get out of a relationship that they've been in for such a long time that's a toxic relationship, that it's not healthy, that it's abusive, both verbally and emotionally. And my approach is, well, if you're that unhappy, I mean, it's like a no-brainer. Get out.
Yeah.
What's stopping you from getting out? And it's always, and you hit it right on the head, it's always that fear of, well, then that means that once I'm done with this relationship, I have to start all over in a new relationship. Yeah. And that's what's scary. Or am I going to find another woman? Or is there going to be another woman that's going to be just as interested in me as the woman I'm with now? And it's that fear of possibly being alone, of not finding another woman for a very long time. And the thing is, my personal view is, if it's that bad, I'd rather just be alone at that point.
Yep, I understand it. I used to teach relationships for a decade or so, and have often had a very similar question, Rob. And it does boil down to a deep kind of bodily fear that, you know, what the heck's after this? If I let this woman go, even though it's a toxic relationship, I may never get kissed again. I may never get hugged again. There may never be another woman for me. And it's that fear of the unknown, which is similar to the fear of death, that holds us back from making a change in our life that would be to our benefit and to the woman's benefit. You know, relationships last as long as they last. And when the end is present, it's much more humane to cut it quickly with a sharp knife than to kind of butcher it with a dull, rusty fishing knife, you know?
Sure. Kind of like just make it quick.
Well,
you know, just,
yeah, just get her done, you know? It's, I've done it both ways, Rob. I was in a relationship, an ex-wife, and oh man, we hung around way too long and it just was getting nasty. And none of us were being served well, and it ended very slowly, and it was like getting cut by a rusty, dull fishing knife. I've also, in my older years, as I ended relationships, did so much more lovingly, with a very sharp knife and lots of clarity and lots of certainty, so that as the knife went through the relationship, it kind of severed it in a much more humane way. And it was better for both myself and for the woman involved that we ended that quickly and that cleanly.
Because I think behind all that, I mean, behind the, because a lot of relationships will have, maybe there's anger, maybe there's a cycle of arguing or disagreeing on things. But behind all that, there is still, I guess, maybe some love, maybe some appreciation.
Yeah.
So it's better, like you said, in a loving way, because I care for you, because I care for myself. Let's just end this quickly, as painfully as we can now, for the best of both of us.
Yeah, yeah. And the same holds true for jobs. I mean, gosh, I know young men, middle-aged men and older men who are hanging on to their job for dear life, and they wake up in the morning grumpy, and they hop on the subway grumpy, and they go to work grumpy, and they come home grumpy. It's like the same thing. What are you afraid of? There's a fear in the ending a job that's not working for you. And what is that? And it's the same thing. There's a big sea of unknown out there. And will I get another job? Will I make as much money? Will I be able to take care of my bills? All valid concerns. But the fear of the ending is paralyzing. And I mean, I know lots of stories about guys who hung on to their careers until they got to retirement age. They retired and died 2 years later.
It's always sad when that happens. I've seen that happen many times.
Oh, it's totally sad. I mean, for me, Rob, I'm a bit of an unusual guy. I change careers about every 5 years because I just am a lifelong learner. And so I've gotten through that fear of worrying about where's the money going to come from. The money always shows up because I'm a good guy doing good stuff. And I'm also doing what I love. And when you do what you love, it's very attractive. And so money gets attracted to guys who are doing what they love.
So, so true. How do we conquer that fear, if we can at all, that fear of the unknown?
Well, that's a good question, Rob. And lots of people ask me that. I've got a couple of answers. One is to start noticing the beginning and end of each day. the birth of the day when you wake up, the death of the day just before you go to sleep. Start to notice the weeks, the beginning of the week, which is, you know, Monday morning, the end of the week, which is Sunday night. Start to notice the seasons, spring moves to summer, moves to fall, moves to winter. Start to recognize the beginning and ends of those sorts of events or units of time. Another thing that I do is I tell people to go plant a garden on your balcony or in your backyard. And they think it's a rather odd suggestion. But the very fact that 90% of us in North America live in an urban center, disconnected from the rural centers or from the farms, is primarily responsible for our lack of remembering about death and our fear of it. You know, back in the 1800s, we all used to live on the farm. We used to slaughter chickens and cows for our food so our family could survive. Now we go down to the corner store and buy a steak or a bunch of Kentucky Fried Chicken. So we're out of touch with the natural cycle of life and death. We're out of touch with the birth of a pig and it's maturing into a sow and slaughtering it for food. We're just out of that very natural process of birth and death. And so planting a garden, though it may sound like an odd thing, gets us back in touch with the natural cycle of the seasons, the natural cycle of planting, the natural cycle of nurturing, and the natural cycle of harvesting.
It's a good thing that we don't have to hunt for our food anymore.
Yeah, especially in New York.
Especially in New York. I mean, I wouldn't even know, you know, I don't know where sandwiches live if I had to go hunt the sandwich.
Maybe Tim Hortons or Subway or something, but totally.
Exactly. This book, When Death Speaks, Listen, Learn, and Love.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating title.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about this book? What can we learn from it?
Well, it's in a way, Rob, it's a survivor's manual, because death is really about the survivors, the one who's passed on. They're gone. So the book is all about how to remember the loved one, to make meaning of their life, how to talk to each other as we go through our first year of missing mom or dad or a sibling, lots of communication skills. It's got a couple of great chapters on all the things we should prepare for around the impending death of a loved one, what hospital care looks like, what funeral homes are all about, and how to arrange the funeral or the cremation. And then a list of people to contact as you wind up or complete the estate of your loved one. I mean, there's just a ton of stuff to do that's got a lot of effort and a lot of focus required in it. And there's also chapters there on, you know, what do you say to kids when their grandpa's died? And how do you be with the children in a way that works for them? So it's a survivor's manual, Rob, and it's also all about how do we help our loved ones who are passing make meaning of their life? Instead of trying to make sense of the death, let's make meaning of the life, and it's way more fulfilling to do.
Well, that sounds very intense. Is it possible to do that in the later days, an elderly person's life, where we help them give meaning to their life? Is it ever too late? I mean, let's say someone who's close to death and they maybe second guessing their life and thinking, well, here's 80 years gone by.
Yep.
And what did this all mean?
Yep. And that's a question, Rob, that a lot of people who are on their deathbed and close to dying ask themselves. And I just worked with a fellow. I do some death coaching. And I worked with a fine gentleman, a vegan chef in New York, of all places, your hometown. And yes. And his dad was passing. He had, you know, a couple of months left to live. And so my client was asking me, how do I help my dad make meaning of his life? How do I get across to him the value that he brought to me? And so I just gave him a list of questions, you know, to ask his dad. And we talked about things that his dad meant to him. And he and his father just had some beautiful conversations. You know, he said to his dad, "Dad, tell me something you're really proud of that you accomplished in your life." And, you know, wow. Things like that. "Dad, what's something that you did at work that you were, you know, really fired up about? Dad, what's something that you did with a family that you'll always remember?" And so there's those sorts of questions that can help people make sense of their lives. I had a client in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and she was lamenting the fact that her cello teacher was close to death, and she didn't really want to go and see her because, you know, saying goodbye is such a hard thing to do. And so I said to my client, who was struggling with whether she should go to the hospital or not, I said, what do you think would happen if you took your cello to the hospital and didn't talk to your teacher at all, but just played her some of your favorite cello music? And she said, oh man, I could do that. I wouldn't have to talk to her. So she, in fact, took her cello to the hospital. She walked it into the room of her dying teacher, sat down, and played for an hour. And her cello teacher cried with joy as she listened to her favorite student play music that she taught her. In other words, the student gave meaning to her dying teacher's life. She died 3 hours later and died happily, knowing that she had had a great impact on at least one person on the planet.
You were able to turn something as scary as death, or something that's scary to most people, and you turn it into something that is so positive,
yeah,
and so meaningful. That is amazing.
Yeah. And you know, Rob, I'm a little older than you are. I'm 65 this year, so I'm what's referred to as an elder in some Aboriginal cultures. At least I think I am. Maybe a bit of ego in that. But what I'm realizing is that we made up the Grim Reaper notion. We all believe that death is bad and wrong. We all believe that, you know, it's grim and horrible. It's just a belief. If we made up that belief, we can remake it. And so what I'm up to is remaking the beliefs we have about death and dying so that we can have those wonderful moments of closure with a teacher or with a father or with a loved one when it's possible. And most times it's possible. That doesn't deny the fact that there are grim deaths, that there are murders and car accidents and airplane accidents where we don't have that chance. But most times, most of us will have an opportunity to have these exquisitely intimate, beautiful moments where we can remember the joy we shared together as we were alive.
Your book, it's available Amazon?
Amazon.ca. Just pop onto Amazon.ca and punch in When Death Speaks, and up will pop the cover of the book and my happy face, and please feel free to buy it. It'll help help my wife pay her mortgage.
Fantastic. Stephen, what a fascinating and enlightening conversation. When we first spoke about this subject and having you on the show, I anticipated something that was going to be dark,
yeah,
sad. And I was thinking, do guys in their 20s and 30s and 40s, is it something that they think about? Is it something that they should be thinking about? And the way you present death and what death is and how it's a natural cycle, there's nothing sad about it, but more of, well, it's a process of life and we're all going to go through it and experience it at one point or another. And it's not that dark and gloomy, and it doesn't have to be
nope.
Dark and gloomy and sad. And that is very enlightening. And I appreciate you taking the time to explain this to us, to go over these very important points, and for sharing your book. And I think everyone will benefit from reading it. You described it very well as it's a manual. It's a manual for living. The title of the book is When Death Speaks, Listen, Learn, and Love. And it's available at Amazon.ca. And we got to help Steve's wife pay for that mortgage. So make sure you go out and buy it. And your website is embraceyourdeath.com.
That is correct.
And I guess there's many other different resources there. If people have questions, they can definitely check that out.
Absolutely.
Stephen Garrett, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Rob, it was my joy entirely. It's fun to get to know such a fine young man as yourself. And
You're too kind.
And blessings to you and your new family. And really enjoy your son. What's his name?
His name is Robert. Robert D. Aguilar.
Enjoy Robert as he ages and grows up quickly, because soon he'll be 23 and He won't want to hug you anymore, Dad.
No, he won't. I appreciate it, Stephen. All right. Thank you so much. Please feel free to come back anytime.
I sure will.
What a fascinating conversation with Stephen Garrett. And I recommend again that you go out and buy his book. It's available at Amazon. Make sure that you use our Amazon affiliate link. This link, you can find it over at our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rob Aguilar Show. Bookmark this page, because every time that you make a purchase on Amazon and you use our link, we get a very small commission and it helps support this show. So Amazon right now has all these great sales going on, especially now that we're in full swing of the holiday season. So make sure you use our affiliate link. Also, we have affiliate links with Onnit. Onnit makes some of the best supplements on the planet, hands down. I'm a big fan of their T Plus, their Alpha Brain. Now, during the cold and flu season, I take Virutec and I take Shroomtec Immune religiously. And I do not get colds ever in the wintertime. So I totally, totally recommend that you check them out. That link is also available on our Facebook page. Make sure you check them out and support this show. If you want to get in touch with me, shoot me an email at robaguilarshow@gmail.com. That goes directly to my phone. If you have suggestions, if you have comments, if you have a guest that you want me to bring on the show, or if you yourself want to be on the show and want to co-host, reach out. I'd love to hear from you. And of course, if you ever see me out and about in the street, stop by, say hello. I'm always, always open to meeting listeners of the show. Eventually, we're probably going to plan an event where maybe we'll do a meetup and I'll keep you guys posted. So make sure you tune in every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern time. Now for the future, a couple of things that we're going to add on to the show. So we're going to add segments to the show. Two actually that I have in mind right now. One is going to be a segment where you send me emails about questions. It could be about anything. It could be advice about work, about a relationship, about something you're going through. And we're going to call that the Ask Rob segment. And we're also going to include something called the Tip of the Week, where you can send in situations that you've gone through that were kind of crazy or funny or whatever. And we'll incorporate that into a Tip of the Week. And that's what we're going to go into right now. We're going to go into this week's Tip of the Week. And this is something that's very, very common. It's happened to myself, especially now during the holiday season. If you're going out of town or if you're out shopping and you're driving, and if you go to a mall, I can think of two or three malls where you have a huge parking lot and you're shopping and you're going through the stresses of that. People are acting up at the malls. And this is personally why I started avoiding malls during this time of the year. And most of the shopping that I do is online, whether it's at Amazon or on eBay or sites like that. But if you must go out and shop at a mall or shop at a shopping center that has a huge parking lot, chances are, once you're done with all the shopping, you're going to forget where you parked. Has that ever happened to you? Think about it. I'm sure it has. So you've been through this 1,000 times. I know I have. And it seems like over and over again, I never learned my lesson. So there you are again in the middle of a crowded parking lot without the vaguest idea where you parked. And these parking lots have different sections, the blue section, the orange section, G2, row A. Some of them have floors, floor one, floor two, mezzanine, concourse. So it's difficult, difficult to keep track of where you parked your car. We've come up with a plan that will help you remember where you parked, or at least figure out how to find your car. So option one, I think, is you have to kind of sit back, think carefully. If you were a 2006 Nissan Maxima, where would you be? And then maybe that'll trigger things in your mind and you will find your car. But if that doesn't work, then you can always go with the second option, which is report it stolen. Go get a drink and let the cops find it. If they don't, you'll be able to possibly collect some insurance money and get a new one that doesn't have French fries and food stuck between the seats. And I think everybody wins. Now wait till the place closes. With fewer cars on the lot, you should be able to find yours. If that's something that you don't want to do and you don't want to wait around till the place closes, then find someone to drive you around. Now the security guard will probably help you find your car if you tell him and he'll drive you around. Or you could get a cab. Or even better yet, now if you're a single dude, you might want to take the opportunity to pick up a sympathetic chick. That sounds like a good option. Now, if you feel like getting a little crazy, you can go ahead and make a spectacle of yourself. Walk around like a jackass with your arm in the air, hitting the unlock button on your key, looking around to see if your car lights flash. If you don't have one of those electronic systems, then your car should be ugly enough to spot at that point. You could also always borrow another car. If there's no security guard and you can't find someone to drive you around, hotwire another car, borrow it until you find yours. And if that doesn't work, what good is it to have a ridiculously expensive smartphone if you don't use it to solve the most of ordinary issues? If a smartphone is too complex for you, then maybe you should get one for your kid and make it his job to track your life. Now, for the future, try to memorize the location of your car based on words you make from the letters and numbers that you see at the locations. For example, if you park in H3, think of, I don't know, three horses. If you park in M16, think of the gun. If you park in F69, well, you know, you get the idea. So that's the tip of the week. I hope you had as much fun as I did on today's show. I want to remind you that we're here on Radio Free Brooklyn every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And we have a great show lined up for next week. Next week, we're going to have sex educator Renee Allison Spina of SmartSexRocks.com. She is always fun. She shares a lot of tips. She's going to give us some great pointers for the single guys who are out there trying to meet women. And these guys know that the struggle is real. So one of the things that we keep hearing over and over again is guys have difficulty approaching women. And I think that difficulty lies with trying to avoid not sounding creepy. And it's always great to have the perspective, the look, the view of a woman. And she's going to tell us exactly what women like and don't like. So that is definitely a show you do not want to miss. That's next week, Renee Allison Spina of SmartSexRocks.com. Stick around. Up next, we have Tripping Beats. Thank you again for hanging out. You guys are the best. And I'll see you all in the promised land.
When I walk on by, girls be looking like, oh, he's fly. I pimp to the beat, walking on the street. I'm a new little freak, yeah. This is how I roll, animal prints getting out of control. It's a red fool with a big afro, and just like Bruce Lee, I got the glow. Oh, oh, girl, look at that body. Oh, oh, girl, look at that body. Oh, oh, girl, look at that body. I work out. When I walk on the spot, this is what I see. Everybody stare, staring at me. I got a passion in my past, and I ain't afraid to show it, show it, show it. Ooh, I'm sexy and I know.
I'm sexy and I know it. I'm sexy and I know it. When I'm at the mall, security just can't fight them off. And when I'm at the beach, I'm in a Speedo trying to tan my cheeks, yeah. This is how I roll. Come on, ladies, it's time to go. We're headed to the bar, baby, don't be nervous. No shoes, no shirt, I still get service. Oh, oh, girl, look at that body. Oh, oh, girl, look at that body. Oh, oh, girl, look at that body. I work out. When I walk on the spot, this is what I see. Everybody stares, they're staring at me. I got passion in my pants, and I ain't afraid to show it, show it. And I know it. Ooh, I'm sexy and I know it. Yeah, I'm sexy and I know it. So wiggle, 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 yeah. Oh, wiggle, 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 yeah. Yeah, yeah. Wiggle, 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 yeah. Oh, wiggle, 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 yeah. I'm sexy and sexy and I know it. Oh yeah, I'm sexy and I know it. I'm sexy and I know it. Mm, I'm sexy and I know it.
Come on home.